Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with President Trump's premature boasts about a successful summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un, which has yet to take place, and his tweet, "Korean War to End," which has prompted Senator Lindsey Graham to gush on Fox News, quote, "If this happens, President Trump deserves a Nobel Peace Prize." Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist David K. Johnston, the best-selling author of The Making of Donald Trump and his latest, It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America, joins us to discuss whether Trump could get a second term. We will assess the state of the Democratic opposition, which in large part is depending upon Trump to either melt down and be dragged out of the Oval Office in a straitjacket or be dragged out of the Oval Office in an orange jumpsuit by Robert Mueller. With the crowd shouting "Nobel, Nobel" last night at a Trump rally in Michigan, at the same time a comedian was trashing the president at the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner, which Trump boycotted for a second time, we will explore the separate universes in American politics, with Trump haters disgusted at Republicans on one side and Trump lovers who hate Democrats on the other. Then we'll look into the extent that Donald Trump is being played by Kim Jong-un, whose charm offensive with the South Koreans appears to be undercutting the leverage Trump has in terms of pressuring North Korea with sanctions and maintaining military threats when the two Koreas are talking peace. Gilbert Rosman, a professor of sociology at Princeton University and author of International Relations and Asia's Northern Tier, Sino-Russian Relations and North Korea and Mongolia, joins us to discuss what kind of deal is likely to emerge from the forthcoming Trump-Kim summit. Then finally, we'll get an assessment of what denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula could mean and whether greater engagement between the two Koreas could lead to the opening of North Korea to the outside world, and speak with Sung-Yoon Lee, a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School of Diplomacy at Tufts University. He joins us to discuss whether either of the summits will lead to the North demobilizing its outsized standing army and the firing of thousands of bemedaled generals and the removal of hundreds of thousands of rockets and artillery tubes targeting Seoul. And joining us now is David K. Johnston, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter and best-selling author of The Making of Donald Trump. He has lectured on economics, journalism, and tax policy on every continent except Antarctica, and is a former president of Investigative Reporters and Editors, and he recently co-founded DC Report, and his latest book just out is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. Welcome to Background Briefing, David K. Johnston.
Well, Ian, thanks. Happy to be on again with you.
Well, thanks, David. And what do you make of the contrast of Donald Trump at a rally in Michigan with the crowd shouting "Nobel, Nobel," referring to the possibility that Trump will get a Nobel Peace Prize for his summit meeting with Kim Jong-un? At the same time, a comedian was trashing him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which Trump had boycotted for a second term.
Well, the most interesting aspect of this, frankly, is the hostile news coverage of the comedian who's gotten pretty critically worded news stories over her choice of jokes and a number of which fell flat with the audience. In Michigan, you know, let's not forget there's always a contingent of Americans who really would like an authoritarian regime. Their individual liberty and the betterment of society is less important to them than having a leader who makes them feel good and tells them what to do. And Donald is a master at that, and anybody who thinks that he will not get a second term isn't thinking clearly. I think his odds of getting a second term are better than 1 in 3.
Well, you can't beat somebody with nobody, and that seems to be the Democrats' problem, doesn't it? I mean,
well, that's one of their problems, Ian. We know the Democrats are opposed to Trump, and we know that if they are in control of the House, which we hope they will, should hope they will be, even Republicans should hope they will be, come next year, what are they for? I mean, I know what the Republicans are for. The Republicans are for the rich will not invest and create jobs unless we give them more money. So let's cut their taxes and let's finance that by taking away from children, the disabled, the elderly, and the poor, that is, people who can't fight back.
And school teachers, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know what the Democrats are for. quite seriously. I mean, are they for unions, which, as Pope Francis says, there is no economic justice without unions? Are they for more funding for higher education and for even elementary schools and whatnot? And if so, how are they going to finance it? Are they for absolutely protecting, if not improving, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? I don't know. And I think that's a real serious problem. Plus, you know, the leadership we see on Capitol Hill is a lot older than I am, and I'm 69 years old. I'd be a youngster among that group if I were in Congress, which I don't want to be. But it is time for the Democrats to get some younger leadership, people in their 40s and 50s, and people who are solidly committed to building a better future, not stealing from the future so the rich can have more today.
Shades of the Soviet Politburo. So, what though, since you've studied this man and covered him for many decades, David K. Johnston, Michael D'Antonio, Trump's biographer, said, "We're dealing with a person who's psychologically and categorically different from any previous president. He may be the most successful con man in history, atop the most powerful nation in history. He has prevailed in a way no other spinner of tales has prevailed."
Well, I say the same thing in my book, it's even worse than you think, that Michael does, but in stronger language. And interestingly, all of Trump's biographers, Harry Hurt, Gwenda Blair, who did the Trump family, Tim O'Brien, who was my colleague at the New York Times, Michael D'Antonio, and Wayne Barrett, who sadly died the day before Trump took office and was the first journalist to get onto Trump, we're all in basic agreement about who he is. He's a con artist. He is incredibly ignorant. He just makes things up. He fills in the blanks. Donald is not the only person I've dealt with in 50 years of journalism like this, but he is one of those people who, whatever he says, that is reality to him. And no set of facts will interfere with his reality. And, of course, that means he's totally flexible. So he's for this today and then against it tomorrow. This is a clear and present danger to our society. But I'll tell you what really scary to me, I spent the last 15 weeks on the road speaking about Trump. And the number of people that I am encountering who believe that, in fact, he is our savior, that he is the future of America, and we desperately need him, that he is doing all the right things, and that the news media really are the enemy of the people, that the Democrats really are vile and awful people who hate America. It's extraordinary how many of them I meet. I've lectured to the executive boards or regional boards of a number of unions that have brought me in, and I go to the union meetings to talk about how do you deal with all your younger members who say, we don't need the union, and who support Trump. And this is very, very troubling about social cohesion and about the future of this country.
And again, I'm speaking with David K. Johnston, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter and best-selling author of The Making of Donald Trump. He has lectured on economics, journalism, and tax policy on every continent except Antarctica, and is the former president of Investigative Reporters and Editors. And he recently co-founded DC Report. And his latest book just out is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. Well, that, of course, is rallying at the press has been very successful for him. President Nixon did it in private. Trump does it in public. And it certainly is resonating. And what's your sense of at that rally? Not only, of course, were they shouting Nobel, Nobel, and as I mentioned in the opening, Senator Lindsey Graham was gushing on Fox News the other night that Trump could win the Nobel Peace Prize. But in the rally, Trump also went after Senator Tester, who revealed information detrimental to Ronny Jackson, the White House physician who Trump elevated as a nominee for the second biggest government department, the Veterans Administration, and revealed that he'd been nicknamed the Candy Man for handing out pills, etc. What Trump did say, though, was, I think, extraordinarily flimsy. He said he said he claimed that he has dirt on Senator Tester, but he wouldn't reveal it. Well, give me a break. If this guy is he's not self-restrained, is he? I mean, if he's got something, he's going to say it, isn't he?
Joseph McCarthy 2.0 in the person of Donald Trump, who's, after all, his, as he called him, his second father and mentor, was the notorious Roy Cohn, who was the attack dog lawyer for Joe McCarthy when he claimed, you know, oh, I have a list of 244 communists in the U.S. Army and other nonsense. That's how Donald operates. You know, Donald calling on a U.S. senator to resign because he disagrees with him about the qualifications of Trump's doctor is an example of what should be scaring the gee-willikers out of people. Donald Trump is a dictator in waiting. His own words show that he does not understand the duties, powers, and limits of the presidency. And so far, he's been able to get away with it a great deal. And when he does something where a federal judge says you can't do that, he attacks the legitimacy of the judge. When the FBI does what it's supposed to do, he attacks the legitimacy of law enforcement. I mean, this is a man who has no business holding any public office, not even, you know, Burbank City Council. And Donald Trump is demonstrating every day this, but at the same time, there's a long winning streak in America of people who they want an authoritarian leader, they want someone they think is tough and throwing his weight around, and who claims credit for everything. And by the way, in the North Korea situation, which I know you're going to discuss with some of the guests, Ian, if there is a resolution to the still existing state of war between the two Koreas, Donald Trump will have had relatively little to do with it, but he will claim all the credit for himself. It's the new president of South Korea and the dictator in North Korea who are much more to be credited with this sort of thing if there is a peace. And it's also not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be over a long period of time. I wouldn't be shocked if it's 10 years till you got to complete resolution of this. If things fall apart, if Donald is played by then, you know, Donald will, of course, denounce everybody else because, remember, this is a man who will claims to be a Christian, so he was asked once, well, what did you last ask God for forgiveness for? And Trump said, well, I've never asked God for forgiveness. Why would I? I've never done anything that would require asking for forgiveness. Donald never takes responsibility. Never, ever, ever.
Well, there's such a flagrant inconsistency here. In 2 weeks' time, Trump is going to pull out of the JCPOA, the P5 plus one deal with Iran, on the basis that the deal only concentrates and only deals with nuclear weapons. It doesn't deal with Iran's behavior in Iraq, Syria, and in Lebanon.
Right.
Well, he's doing exactly the opposite with the North Koreans. He's making a deal over the so-called denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, whatever that means,
but
won't talk about...
He's not going to talk about
human rights and all of the other issues and the fact that North Korea, counterfeits $100 bills and deals drugs, etc. So there you have it. It's so flagrant that...
That's because Donald has no... philosophy. He, in fact, has said his entire life philosophy can be reduced to a single word, revenge. It's in his book, Think Big. It's in talks he gave that were videotaped or audiotaped. It's in interviews that he's given. His life's philosophy is revenge. Donald knows nothing of geopolitics. This is a man who, on his first foreign trip as president, goes to Saudi Arabia and praises the Saudis for fighting against terrorism when they fund what the U.S. State Department says are 59 of the 61 terrorist groups in the Middle East. He attacks Qatar, which has the U.S. has its most important base in, and where, we learned later, the Qataris declined to give his son-in-law a loan to bail the Kushner family out of 666 Fifth Avenue. Understand that Donald Trump is the third generation head of a crime family. The Trumps have been a crime family since the late 19th century. Grandpa Trump was a pimp who ran whorehouses in Washington State and the Yukon Territory, and later we don't know what kind of criminal enterprises, but he worked out of a tobacco shop in New York and yet had a great income. Well, he didn't get it from selling cigarettes and chewing tobacco. Fred Trump was a thief and had as his business partner an associate of the Gambino and Genovese crime families named Willie Tomasello. And Donald Trump has been a thief and a con artist and a swindler his entire life. We have a criminal in the White House who, like most white-collar criminals, has never been indicted, never been arrested. Most criminals don't ever get caught. It's just the dumb ones who'd commit stupid street crimes who get caught. Sophisticated criminals walk all the time. And Donald would see no contradiction between Iran and South Korea. Donald has no idea that Iran is the most cultured, advanced society in that part of the world and is the natural leader in the Middle East, not the Saudis. He doesn't know a Sunni from a Shia. And you remember his campaign put out a brochure with a picture of an American Sikh that said under the caption, Muslim. These are ignoramuses.
Well, you in fact, it's in your books, about Donald Trump's relationship to a cocaine dealer when he was in the casino business
right.
in New Jersey.
Who lives in the sound of your voice now.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a dealer. He was he was an international cocaine trafficker. And I'll say to you what I've said many times. The things that Donald Trump did, and I have all the documents and the letters to back what I'm saying, the favors he did for him, the fact that this guy's case was transferred from Ohio to the courtroom of Marianne Trump Berry in New Jersey, Donald's sister, and that he only served 18 months while the mules who drove the drugs got 20 years, and Donald kept doing business with him, even though he should have lost his casino license for doing that, says one thing. It makes no sense whatsoever what he did unless he was in business with Joe Wechselbaum in the cocaine trafficking, in which case everything he did makes sense. And Donald, if you're listening, if you think I just slandered you, sue me.
Well, just in closing then, David K. Johnson, given that Ronny Jackson was called the Candy Man and was handing out
right.
drugs, is there a possibility that he also that is the core of their relationship, apart from the fact that he's a genial guy, although apparently the people that work for him thought he was pretty terrible, he was a kiss-up and a kick-down kind of guy.
Right.
What do you think is going on with Trump himself? I know he doesn't drink, but I was noticed in those debates with Hillary Clinton that he kept sniffing as though he had a cocaine habit. Do you think there's anything going on with his relationship with the Candy Man that somehow that's why they bonded?
Yeah, I want to word this very, very carefully. First of all, Ronny Jackson has no qualifications to run the VA, the second biggest federal agency. He has no management experience of any consequence. Running a 50-person medical office has nothing to do with running the second largest agency of the United States government. He's also the doctor who said Donald had grown an inch to 6'3", and more significantly, that he only weighs 239 pounds. Anybody who believes Donald Trump only weighs 239 pounds, which put him, you know, just below the morbid obesity index or somewhere, I forget the exact measure, that's absurd. Just take a look at the man. He clearly weighs more than that. So he curried favor with Trump, as he's done, by the way, with some of the previous presidents who he was the physician for. Now, on the issue of Donald does not drink, Donald, we know, was seeing a Dr. Feelgood who gave him shots back in the 1980s. And Donald, this is to goes to your question about Donald's sniffing and his behavior, particularly in the first debate where he got lost at the end and wandered off into nowhere land. Donald says he does not use drugs, and I do not have any verifiable evidence to the contrary. The important word there being verifiable evidence.
Well, David K. Johnson, I thank you for joining us, and we will definitely stay in touch.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with David K. Johnson, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investor, reporter, and bestselling author of The Making of Donald Trump. He has lectured on economics, journalism, and tax policy on every continent except Antarctica, and is a former president of Investigative Reporters and Editors, and he recently co-founded DC Report. And his latest book just out is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back looking into whether Kim Jong-un's charm offensive undercuts Trump's leverage.